Well, hello again and welcome to another edition of Authors Audio. I'm your host, Jake D. Steele. Remember, you can listen to all of our interviews by visiting our website at www.authorsaudio.com and click on the headset listen icon on the homepage or the iTunes icon and listen from there. I have with me today a man who is truly a man for all seasons. He's a great poet, humorist, entertainer, songwriter. It goes on and on. I'm talking about Toronto, Canada's own great poet, Robert Priest. He has published 7 children's books and 7 books of poetry and prose for adults, including The Visible Man, Sadness of Spacemen, The Man Who Broke Out of the Letter X, and The Mad Hand. He is also the recipient of the Milton Acorn Memorial People's Poetry Award. Some of the techniques he uses throughout his new publication, Reading the Bible Backwards, are reverse engineering the word, mime splicing, morpheme replacement therapy, and phonetic modifications. I don't know if any of you have had those treatments, but they're excellent. Robert is with us today and will be reading from his latest book of poetry, Reading the Bible Backwards. And it's great to have you, Robert. Hello, and how are you doing?
Not too bad. How about you?
I'm doing very well. Yeah. Thanks, Robert. I know that you're a very busy guy. You've done so many things. You've written children's stories. You've written books and poems for adults. You've actually written songs and so on. We're going to feature a song of yours on the end of the program, and we're also going to get you to read. What I'd like to know is maybe how you got started in this amazing personal career, because it is very different from going out and getting a 9-to-5 job, that's for sure. But maybe you could tell our listeners a little bit about that.
I began writing poetry when I was 8 years old, and so my influences up till that time were certainly, you know, my mother, because my mother recited and wrote poetry, and so the poems that she recited, those poets were influences, such as John Masefield and Alfred Noyes and people like that, Victorian English rhyming type poets. And, you know, like whatever else was in the culture of the day, Mother Goose and all that stuff. As I aged, you know, around the age of 19, you know, I began to become aware of modern poetry a lot more. And then I read people like Irving Layton and the Beats and Margaret Atwood and Gwendolyn McEwen and that generation of Canadian writers. And they also became very influential on me. Then, you know, Mayakovsky, the great poet of the Russian Revolution, was a huge influence, as was Pablo Neruda, the Chilean poet. Leonard Cohen is an influence. So many others, really. I think any poet I've ever loved probably has crept in a little bit.
Well, that sounds right, Robert. It doesn't really matter what discipline you're in, but at first, when you're learning, you have to be on a kind of a guidance system where you're gathering up and resonating with various, in your case, poets and writers, and finding out exactly who you are through some of their work as it resonates with you. So that's an absolute must. And then, of course, as you go on, you leave some of that behind and really become your own person.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was the case, certainly, in the first decade. I find now, I feel like, I mean, you never write without influence, of course, but I feel like, you know, in the earlier years, there were a lot of things that I had tendencies toward, and it wasn't necessarily, the culture of the day wasn't saying, yes, we want that. And I would say, well, I guess I shouldn't be doing wordplay, or I shouldn't use a rhyme, or you know, but I find as you know, I'm 57 now, and I find I'm much more aware of what is kind of my own tendencies, and I've got much more willingness, really, to accept that and to explore it and to be creative with it. So, I think I I do somewhat shed my influences through time.
That's right. And how many books do you have out in total now, Robert?
I think it's 15, but they're not all poetry. There's a couple of there's some prose books and you know, so probably maybe counting the children's poetry, maybe as many as 10 or 11 books of poems.
Wow, that's you know, that's a lot of work there. People, I think some people, certainly people that are not that familiar with poetry, they see a poem that's doesn't look all that long, and they say, oh, well, these poets are getting away with murder. I mean, they're not writing a 56-page poem or something like that. But this kind of modern-day poetry, and that's a question, too, I might put to you, is that poetry itself has really changed over the years in structure and so on.
Yeah, for sure.
What brought that on? Was it just the idea of having more freedom to express yourself? Or?
Well, I mean, every art has changed through time, and I think that's just an evolutionary process. That it's not fitting to just go on repeating what your ancestors did, and it's sort of, you know. So there's always a tendency with adventurous poets to try to come up with something new or find a fresh way to phrase something or a new whole style of poetry. So it's sort of inevitable, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And along with your poetry, you do poetry readings in schools all around the Toronto area.
Yeah. Oh, well, all over the world, really. I mean, I've done it in, you know, Australia and, you know, Hungary and Hawaii and, you know, so I get around. Of course, that was before Stephen Harper canceled that plan, which was the department that used to give the grants for travel so that Canadian artists could go abroad and take the good name of our country with them. But last I heard, he had canceled that particular part of the arts funding.
Oh, he did.
Who could believe that? I mean, who would have thought Stephen Harper would cancel arts funding? But there you go.
Yeah. This is definitely an inside Canadian joke that we're laughing at here, but that's true. Well, even Quebec, of course, the French in Quebec are very, very, very much into supporting their arts and always have been.
Yeah, that was the rich side of it, was that he suffered for that, that he almost lost the election because of arts funding.
Yeah, it's really interesting the power that the arts plays in the society, as it should, because it is the bottom line kind of expressive element for all the people who maybe can't put it into the form that you do or novelists and whatever. But our prime minister made a definite guffaw on that one.
Yeah.
Well, getting back to your work, Robert, you're also a songwriter as well as being many other things, aren't you?
Yeah.
There's one really great little song on your website called One Crumb, which is a lot of fun because the song is really good also, but the setting is rather interesting.
Yes, me naked with a couple of horses.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And they were kind of cool. They were really digging the song and walking around. And
yeah, it looks so well choreographed. It's on my, what is it, Great Big Face De, with a D on the end, Great Big Face at YouTube. So if people want to see it.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think you can also see it on your website, correct?
There's probably a link to the YouTube from my website, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And one thing, of course, just so my listeners don't miss this ecstatic moment with the horses and the song that Robert sings, it will be played at the end of the interview, and I hope you all get a kick out of it. And if you like, you can hook up with the YouTube link, which I'll put on my webpage too. So it's a lot of fun. Well, just changing the topic for a moment, Robert, you and I are approximately about the same age, And in the past, there used to be all kinds of venues in Toronto and in most cities across North America and Europe and so on. There was this club scene where new bands could play or poets could read and all this kind of jazz. Are there still places in Toronto, for example, that you know about that new poets can read and get their work out there, or is this kind of diminished over time?
Well, I don't know. I don't know really. I mean, it's such a diverse community that, and I would hope that even that it extends to who people are reading. So, you know, I'm sure there some poets go to certain bars. I mean, there's scenes, and there's sort of like you've got your spoken word scene. And so a lot of those people, I don't know where they hang out, but you go to a spoken word event, and that's a social event as well. You know, and then you've got the sort of the more literary community led by literary. I don't mean, you know, I mean book poets. And I guess for me, I mean, I don't go and hang out with people, so I don't know, but it tends to be that the readings, the recitations become the focus for socializing in a way so that people go out afterwards. So if people are ever looking to socialize with poets, and God knows why, but that would be the way to do it. Just go to readings and you start meeting people, really.
I think that there's a lot of people that would really enjoy that just don't know where to start, where to go, you know, and
yeah, there is. I feel the same way that there's a lot of enjoyment can be had from hearing the recitation of poetry, but getting the good word out and getting through that sort of apparently top layer of poetry that is in people's minds, which is that it is difficult and off-putting and a practice by you know elite groups. It's kind of hard to shake that out of people's minds for some reason. But I agree that there is actually a lot of you know downright entertainment to be had from poetry, aside from the riches of deeper investigation.
Well, one thing I wanted to cover, Robert, in this interview was this little sparring you had a few years ago with the Ontario legislature, and it ended up being a very funny incident. You had two different kinds of energy and two different kinds of consciousness smashing together, and what ended up happening was just a real laugh. So maybe you could tell us a little about that.
Well, I didn't really so much as get in trouble as get quoted a lot in the legislature. It was during the Harris era, and I wrote a little marching song for people to sing as they marched, in which I, you know, used the names of various ministers in nasty ways. You know, it's time to clean out the eaves for Ernie Eaves and shake off the thieves. And, you know, like I just rhymed with their names with a good chorus. And then when Tories tried to pass their omnibus bill, the only weapon that the opposition had was the, you know, what is that thing? Were you just talk and talk and talk?
I think you mean filibuster. Is that right?
Yeah, the word has slipped my mind. So they needed material. So and it was an NDP guy got up and he just said, I'd like to, you know, quote. And he was quoting my song, and then even though it was, you know, then that the tuna fish guy to Bootsy got up and objected to it, and thereby extended their the talkathon. So that's what you're talking about. It was I didn't really get in trouble. I just got a slight glory of having my words read into Hansard by a minister.
Well, you know, as they say in show business, there's no bad press.
Yeah, they didn't see the reviews of my most recent play, but yeah, it's also on YouTube. Same site, The Great Big Face, youtube.com/greatbigfaced with a D, all one word.
You're also known as Dr. Poetry on CBC's World Beat.
Word Beat. Yeah, I wish it was due, but it's actually did at this point. The word beat, I think that ended about 2 years ago. I still do some of the Doctor Poetry material, and I do hope to get something cooking on radio again. But yeah, that was a spoken word program hosted by Lillian Allen, and she invited me onto it and said I was going to be this character, Doctor Poetry, and take it from there. And so Dr. Poetry was concerned with word health, and basically I just used, you know, various strands of doctorship to come up with, you know, poems that maybe they had a prescriptive nature, or they were absurd remedies, or, you know, weird health warnings, all kind of related to poetry.
Robert has some very interesting reviews and insights written about his work, and I just wanted to show you a few of those and give an idea of what other people say about his work. So there's a few here.
Poetry full of flashes of insight, imaginative in a strange way. He takes inordinate chances with logic, counting absurdity with absurdity, and expanding our sense of human emotional possibilities. The Oxford Companion to Canadian Literature wrote that.
Yeah, that was thoughtful, I thought. That someone had actually, you know, read the work and tried to consider it and see what was making it tick and was able to articulate something there.
This one here, too, I like this little aphorism. The most dangerous people are obedient.
Are the obedient, yeah. That's Yeah, that's I have a little collection called the Time Release Poems, because I also write aphorisms, which again I think of as being as basically poetry. So that is one of them. I like that one.
Now, speaking of awards, I believe you also received the prestigious Milton Acorn Award. Is that right, Robert?
I did. Yeah, that was for my book The Mad Hand, which was in the I think it was the late 80s.
Very good. What I would like to do for our listeners is maybe if we could just read two or three of your poems here and let them get a feel for how the writer of the poetry actually reads them. And I think once you hear Robert read these poems, you'll get a very insightful look at the man and his work.
Okay, sure. Well, this is the title poem for Reading the Bible Backwards. Reading the Bible backwards, Christ Jesus pops his nails and comes down to give the karma back to the people. Bearing the cross downhill, he shrugs off the scourging of his torturers. He escapes unscathed from his backwards trial, returned by Rome to the Judas kiss. Reading the Bible backwards, Christ Jesus says, "Cursed are the meek, for the rich shall inherit the earth." He says, "Turn the other cheek, or I'll turn it for you." The money changers throw backwards Jesus out of the temple, and he wanders around, giving people leprosy and causing blindness. Reading the Bible backwards, Christ Jesus turns the adulteress over to her judges. He puts the resurrected back to death, but they rise again like bread. After that, he leaves the living living and the dying dying. He moonwalks rapidly out of history. Back to Mary's arms in reverse birth, he shrinks through her womb, rewound to the infertile egg and beyond. For a while, there is a star that hovers. Then that, too, is gone.
Very nice.
Thank you. And, you know, the sort of underlying architecture of the book is one of a graph made of vectors where the lines have directions. And basically, I have this notion of reversing the polarities just to see how things work backwards. If you play a song backwards, it is still music, and sometimes it's not even bad music.
Sometimes it says that Paul is dead, right?
Yes, exactly. So that was, you know, reversing a story in the New Testament. But the other movement that I saw happening in the book was kind of a sideways movement, and that's the movement of these pieces that I call meme splices. Just to explain, because I'm kind of jumping on scientific kind of architecture here is that a gene splice, as your listeners probably know, is when people splice in new DNA to an existing gene and then let it propagate, and it alters that gene. And it, maybe that's interesting or maybe not. So what I'm doing is meme splices. I blow in new letters or substitute letters into words of existing memes and then let them propagate and see where it takes me. So in this piece I'm going to recite now, I took the word money and I blew out the N and the E and blew in two M's, so it became mummy. And so here's a meme splice, the money mummy meme splice.
Okay.
Just give me mummy. I work hard for my mummy. You need mummy to get by in this world. You have to save your mummy. Let your mummy grow. Don't let your mummy take over your life. Don't get too attached to mummy. Mummy can weigh you down. Use your mummy wisely. Keep your mummy in a safe place. Mummy is just a tool. Mummy is a symbolic system. We are in a mummy-obsessed culture. Mummy hounds, slaves to mummy. We spend our whole lives scrabbling for mummy, mummy, mummy. Filthy mummy, bloody mummy. Hypnotized by the power of mummy. We're all in the pocket of big mummy. Good mummy, bad mummy. What is this insane lust for mummy? Mummy is being driven down, devalued. We have not been very smart about our mummy. When interest rates are low, mummy is cheap. Mummy destroys human relationships. Just throw mummy at it. Mummy changes everything. I have no mummy sense. I'm bad with mummy. Mummy burns a hole in my pocket. I have to go begging for mummy in the streets. I hate mummy. I reject mummy. Mummy is the root of all evil. But it's so hard to live without mummy. I'm trying to hold on to my mummy, but everybody wants my mummy. What happened to our mummy? We took huge risks with our mummy, and we lost. We are completely broke. We totally wasted our mummy.
That's excellent, Robert. Excellent.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I wrote that before all this stuff, by the way, before the big market collapse. I wrote that last year. So I'm prescient. Do you want one more poem?
Sure. We does everybody want one more poem? All right. Let's go for it.
Okay. Well, the book, the first part of the book is backwards stuff, and then I get into the sideways and the bi-directional.
Yeah.
And then it seems to me that I should get into the present day and the forward-moving stuff, so that the last part of the book reverses the polarity and becomes more like a present-day book of poems. So my son is a skateboarding person, so here's one about, it's called Skater Son. He makes a roller coaster of a handrail, rides the revolutions lateral and long. The boy is surfing a stone curve, almost sideways, skating street and step alike. Loose on architecture, he winds and sways his way to and from school, or just down the road a piece and back, balanced on a leaf, sailing the stairs, taking back all the rivers that were ever taken, making the rivers be everywhere.
And that was Robert Preece from Toronto, Canada, reading from his latest book called Reading the Bible Backwards. Probably very timely piece, really, when you think of the times we're in. And I highly recommend it. It is very, very excellent poetry, indeed. And it shows Robert's maturity in his work, as he has written many, many other books of poetry. And you might want to read this then read Revelation and see if there's something that magically happens to your insight. But thank you, Robert, for that. I really appreciate it.
I'm sure you'll have lots of books out before 2012, of course, when the world comes to an end, right?
Yeah. Every day the world comes to an end.
That's right, yes. Well, that comes from Egypt, you know, when they we talk about sunset. That's the hours of Horus, which is divided into 12 in Egypt. It's called the hours of Horus, and there were 12 hours of Horus, which again gets translated into our word hours.
Oh, I see. Okay, I didn't know that.
That's kind of interesting. And then when, so Horus is the god of the light, and he resides over the light. So of course in the sunlight. And then when his brother Set, basically we get the word sunset.
Interesting.
Yeah, we're studying on this stuff for quite a while, and it's very interesting to find out where some of these ideas and words really come from.
Well, I certainly share that curiosity, and I've written a poem in that mode too, but it's very interesting to find out where words can be tracked back through. I didn't know those ones, though, and I know a lot of them, but not that one.
Well, we have come to the end of another edition of Authors Audio, and this time with poet Robert Priest talking about his new book called Reading the Bible Backwards. And it's been a great pleasure, Robert, to have you on the program, and thanks very much. You can listen to all of our interviews by visiting our website at www.authorsaudio.com and click on the listen icon there. And as we go out, you're going to hear Robert Priest singing his little song called One Crumb, and I think you'll find it quite entertaining. And we also provide a link to YouTube where you can actually see him performing this song with some of his friends. And until next time, this is Jake D. Steele saying, keep dreaming and happy reading. Bye for now.
One crumb is a hook to another crumb, and you can never go anywhere except to another crumb. And there are advertisements on the way, all for a better crumb. And you can never have the whole loaf. No, you can never have the whole loaf. But you do get one crumb, and that's a hook to another crumb. And there are advertisements on the way, all for a better crumb. And you can never have the whole loaf. No, you can never have the whole loaf. Just one crumb.